Like to call this meeting of House State Affairs to order. It is 8:07 on Tuesday, April 11th, and present are Representative Elkins, Representative Ramirez, Representative Gardner, Representative Lynn, Representative Gatto, and myself, Seaton. And today we have three items on our agenda. The first is SB 250, Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Council. And then we'll be looking at SB 310, Employment of Prisoners, and SB 12, Limit Relationship with Certain Nations. And so our first item is SB 250, and we have a lot of information. So if the executive director would like to come up and introduce yourself for the record, and then we'll...
My name is Barbara Mason. I'm the Executive Director of the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. I met with several of you, and I realized that there was a lot of misinformation that was about the Council, and I welcome this opportunity to inform you about the Council. You've all received packets that containing last year's minutes and agendas, which shows the work that we've been doing over the last year, as well as the attendance of what's been going on in our meetings. You also have 5 years of missions and measures at the request of Representative Seaton, and also 5 years of agendas showing, again, our meeting times. We also included a response to recommendation one of the sunset audit in order to let you know what we were doing to move forward that recommendation. The mission of the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault is to implement a statewide system of services for the protection of individuals and families affected by domestic violence and sexual assault. I've handed out a fact sheet describing the Council and information and contact information. The Council is a government entity. We're housed in the Department of Public Safety. The Council has two main functions. One is to coordinate with the departments in our Council, as well as other state and community groups dealing with domestic violence and sexual assault. The other is a funding, as a funding source, which differs from most of the other councils listed on the governor's boards and commissions, which are mostly advisory. The Council is made up of 7 members consisting of representatives from the Departments of Public Safety, Law, Education, Early Development, Health and Social Services, and 3 public members appointed by the governor. I've attached an organizational chart to show who's that, as well as how our staff is composed. As executive director, it is my job and my staff's job to move forward the work of the Council. One of our tasks is to manage funds received by the state of the Alaska and the federal government. Representative Gruenberg requested a breakout of our budget between what is dispersed to the programs and what is used by CDBSA for administrative costs. Please see the handout entitled CDBSA Fiscal Year 2006 Budget. You can see that less than 10% is used for administrative costs. Most of the money goes out to the programs. These program funds are dispersed through a request for proposals process on a 2-year cycle. We just had that one in June in terms of dispersing the funds. Then if we get extra funds, we will go again in June and do another request for proposal process. The Council oversees and audits the programs that have been funded, so we are also a monitoring agency. We also administer the state certified batterer intervention programs. By that I mean that we go through and make sure that they can be certified, and we go out and visit them. We go through the paperwork that's submitted for the certification process, and for the certified programs we also go out and monitor them. We use a proprietary database to capture information from funded CDVSA programs in order to comply with data requirements from our funding sources. The Council meets on a quarterly basis. Each of you has received a copy of last year's minutes and agendas. In 2005, there was a 5th meeting to review proposals and award the grants for the valid discretionary funds. This actually usually happens, so we usually have 5 meetings in a year. Meetings may last for more than one day depending on the purpose of the meeting. For instance, the June meeting is usually a 3-day meeting, and the September meeting was a 2-day meeting. In September, we also met to look forward with goals and objectives that we would like to move forward in this following year, or as we're working with it. At each quarterly meeting, the council reviews the reports sent in by the programs and notes concerns raised that are relevant to their departments in order to address these issues. For instance, if there's a concern about prosecution, Susan Parks will make note of that and follow up with it. Because of the importance of this subject, all of the departments and all of the and to the community, they are well attended, as you can see by the minutes y'all have received in your packets. Another common question I receive is, what is the difference between the council and the network? And really, it's very simple. The council manages state and federal funds, and we're a government entity. The network represents the programs that receive the funds and is a private nonprofit entity. We have a common goal, and that is to provide for the safety and intervention for those affected by domestic violence and sexual assault. In conclusion, I would like to state that I believe the council, as did the legislative auditor, provides a much-needed public need and operates in a public interest. The council supports Senate Bill 250 as it stands, and I'm more than happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Barbara. Appreciate that. Does anyone, Representative Gatto?
Thanks. Yeah, Barb, we have big stack of paper here, and you have a big stack of paper there.
Yeah.
And if we tried to cover all this stuff, we'd be here till the end of the week and in the next week. So I'm going to hide this stack, and I want you to hide your stack. And
sure.
Just tell me, in the simplest terms, the who, what, when, where's, and why's. Basically, what do you do? What do you get to do what you do? How effective are you? You know, you're good with money. Kind of conversational thing, because my exposure to the council is limited, but my but my knowledge of sexual assaults is what I read in the paper and what I gleaned from schools and what I gleaned from a lot of sources. Mm-hmm. So tell us what the problem is and what we're making progress on the problem, because that's really, I guess, what the council hopes to do, is to say, now that we're here, sexual violence is gone, but it's not. So in simplest terms, go through this whole stack of paper in a few paragraphs.
Well, there's a big
order. We don't have till Saturday night. That's the
right. Well, and I provided this at the request of Representative Seaton and through the chair, if I may respond. I'm trying to remember that. Domestic violence and sexual assault basically affects the community and is an issue addressed by all of the departments that are represented on our council. For instance, law enforcement responds to the crime of domestic violence and sexual assault. Prosecution prosecutes the crime of domestic violence and sexual assault. When you get the departments of the divisions under the Department of Health and Social Services, OCS Child Welfare will deal with clients that are affected by domestic violence, sexual assault, as well the Department of Disabilities, as well the Department of Aging, as well those working with assistance payments. I'm not ATAP here, I believe it is. So also with education, the kids that are going to school are affected by. When you look at how do you address the problem, you go, what are the issues that you need to deal with? First, you need to deal with safety first, and that's where you put in together a system of shelters. And with shelters, you are able to get people out of a crisis information and help them plan. Where do they go from here? How do they stay safe from here? So that's a crisis intervention piece. When you move forward from that, you're then looking at how do you do a maintenance piece? How do I then go from being in a, living in a risky situation, in a domestic violence situation, and how do I move forward? So then what you're doing as part of the shelter's job is to do is help them plan. What am I going to do in the future in order to help maintain safety? How do I contact law enforcement? What are the resources out of there? What are the housing opportunities? Who are the resources and supports I have in my family and in my community? So that's a planning stage. So we're looking at that in terms of the programs that we fund. Yes.
How many people, how much money, I guess?
Representative Gatto.
Thank you. You have a network composed of 1,000 people, 100 people. You see 1,000 people, 100 people a year, and your budget is 100 million, a million, 100,000, 1,000. Throw some closure, I guess, around, get my arms around this.
Representative, on your desk here, there's a Council on Domestic Violence fact sheet. And then behind that, the third page is the budget. So that might help.
I guess there was so much stuff here that I...
Yeah, there's on your, right over there.
Off?
When you came in.
Okay.
So I think before we go into, as we look at that, let's step back a little bit, because we have an audit that we had, a second audit that's been done, and there were some recommendations there.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess my question was, you know, first of all, everyone on this committee has been dealing with this in some way or other, whether we just voted through a bill and, mm-hmm. and there was a rally on the steps and everything else. So first of all, let's make sure that everybody recognizes that we all identify this as an extremely important problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have before us this council to look at the sunset date, extending the sunset mm-hmm. date, and the proposal is to 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for everybody's information, why I requested all the information, is that's a long extension on a council. And what we want to make sure is that since the audit identified several items that mm-hmm. are not happening or that haven't been developed into a plan,
mm-hmm.
what we want to do is see where we are in the planning stage. Do we have a strategic plan developed?
Mm-hmm.
What is the target for developing that plan? And then the question is for us, extending to 2014 without seeing that plan being developed, is that the best thing, or is there something else that we need to do? Because this is such an important topic that everyone wants to make sure that we're proceeding in a way that will get the topic addressed most accurately. So I just want to put a little setup on that so it's not as if anybody's being attacked. And I do want to draw to everybody's attention also, the audit identified that one of the major problems has been a turnover in the executive director and the operation manager, or I forget the title of the other person.
It's basically the program associates.
Program associates in the last 4 years, I believe. So that this is not something that we're saying just that you've failed to do. I mean, when you have a turnover like that, it's extremely difficult to have a program fully developed and functioning. And mm-hmm. so this is, again, not to say that you haven't done it, because you haven't been here the whole time. And but anyway, so
okay. Go ahead from there. I also, on the top of the big packet that's, you know, scary, is just a single sheet, and it talks about that once through the sunset audit, I contacted our board members that represent HSS and also Barbara Thompson with the Department of Education. The Department of Education is currently working on a set of education modules for their professional staff that will go out to all of the teachers in the districts. And there will be doing one on domestic violence, and I will be participant of that. After that, we plan on looking at, because the department itself doesn't do the curriculum for the school districts, so what we will be doing is finding out when do the school districts meet? How do we get to them so that we can then move forward and find out? Because I do know that many of the programs use funds that we give them and other funds that they get to go out to the schools to do teaching in the schools around these issues. So we need to find out what curriculums are out there, what's being used, and what districts are being used so that we can then move forward on that piece of the mandate and recommendation from the sunset audit. The second one is working with the Department of HSS, and as I previously mentioned, the HSS programs all are affected and deal with the same populations, those that have been affected by domestic violence and sexual assault. But because of the legislative mandate, the first places where we'll start is, of course, the Department of Health, because we need to be working at what's going out in the very health clinics in terms of addressing this issue, what kinds of questions are being asked. You know, if somebody comes in with an injury that is not consistent with the story being given? Are they asking, how did you receive this injury? You know, are they making sure they can ask the question, separate it maybe from the person's partner, which isn't always an easy thing to do. So that will be one of the first areas that we do. And to that end, I will be meeting with the division heads and the Department of Health and Social Services on April 17th. Our focus will then be the three top, which would be the Department of Health or Division of Health, OCS, and Behavioral Health, all of which, Behavioral Health in particular, as we're looking at how do we address victims and perpetrators of violence or offenders of violence who may need some help in terms of going through the trauma, because most of victims have what's called PTSD, post-traumatic stress syndrome, and that can be a mental health issue. So that's the plan on moving forward with that.
Okay, and Barbara, I guess, where we're at, we're looking programmatic, and, mm-hmm. and I appreciate we're going forward looking at these things, but we want to make sure that these are not just your daily contacts with people.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the track of developing a strategic plan to get those things done? I mean,
mm-hmm. I've contacted the people putting together the module, and they have contacted me, so I've spoken with them. And then, like I said, I will be meeting people I have not interacted yet with the division heads when I go to the division head meeting out of HSS, so that I can make the contacts and start working with them individually and working myself through that system.
Okay, and I guess Barbara, what I'm trying to say is that we would really like to see a plan on paper, mm-hmm. a development strategy for doing this. In other words, I understand that you, as the executive director, are making contacts and doing meetings, but the charge under statute is to develop, those things, and hopefully mm-hmm. we're doing that in a strategic way with mm-hmm. a developmental plan mm-hmm. for how it's going to happen in Department of Health and Social Services, how we're going to proceed with the Department of Education, and not do it on an ad hoc basis.
Mm-hmm.
So that we have something to measure against. Where are we on the plan?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we could have you back next year, and mm-hmm. you could tell us, basically that you've made contacts and you've done these things. But what we need to do is have to review the statutory authority. We need to have a plan to see how we are doing. And that's why I ask you to bring forward the missions and measures,
mm-hmm.
which we'll go forward here in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Gardner, did you have a question?
Yes, I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sort of looking at the duties of the council, and there are about 14 of them. And I guess I'm, as you speak and looking through the materials, and granted this big stack we just got a few minutes ago, I'm trying to listen and read those things with an eye to measuring how they fit with the duties of the council. And from what we've heard thus far, I mean, there are elements of the council duties that we haven't really sort of heard yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my question is, if you're going to come back, is that the chair's intent?
Well, let's get through today and see where we're going. I don't think that this is something that, we can ask you to do. I mean, I don't want to have this being something, go home and invent a plan and come back. I mean, this is something that needs to be developed in coordination with each department of how is this going to be developed, and how are you going to be able to integrate and monitor whether these are taking place within the department. And we do have commissioners online, so we can ask them as well.
Okay, and there are some elements,
Representative Gardner,
here, thank you, that are fairly specific. Develop and implement standardized data collection system on domestic violence, sexual assault, crisis intervention, and prevention. I'd be very interested in seeing what that looks like and who's participating and how well that's being done. And I guess I'm a little, well, more than a little, I'm uncomfortable with extending the date
mm-hmm.
for that long a period when I don't feel like I have a sense that the duties of the council are being met at this time.
Through the chair, may I respond? Actually, we're very proud of our database.
Good.
We've just This is the first year that we've been doing with the new system, and we're meeting all of the requirements, not only of our funding people. All of the programs that we fund put into the database, we determine, we're tracking how many individuals, how many services are being accomplished, what are the various crimes. Most victims will have more than one crime, will be victim of more than one crime, sad to say. And so we're being able to track that, not attached to each individual. So we're tracking not only how many individuals are receiving services, but what are the services that they're getting through the program. So, no, we're very proud of this data system that we've put together.
Okay.
And, you know, maybe it would help us if we go to the missions and measures. If you look at this group of papers everybody should have that have the blocked out ones, these here.
It's with this paper clip around.
Yeah, there's a paper clip around, the big paper clip on it, and not the, that one there.
This one?
No, the one you have in your hand, I believe. Yeah. See if it's in there. Yeah, there they are. The ones that have the grayed out titles.
I don't think Carl's got.
See if everybody can find them there. And possibly it would help if we went to 2006, and you'll notice that down at the middle of the bottom is the year where it says FY 2006 or 5 or so forth on back. Would you lead us through the most...
May I ask one question?
Yes, Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The FY 06 was prepared 12/27/04. Is that your latest, which is some 16 months ago?
As I'm known, this was actually, as I look at this, I pulled this off of the government page, and it's not actually the most current one.
Could you please provide that
yes,
to
I
us
will.
By the end of the business day today? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So FY06 one is not the most current?
This is the one it looks like that was,
I believe that...
this was the one that was finished when I first came on. I did one with just recently that with the new missions and measures out of OMB, but they, as I'm thinking about it, that may be, I'm thinking how the fiscal year changes. So this would have been... The one for the preceding, the one we just did, would be for the next year. So maybe it is the most current one.
And Representative Grunberg's question is, at the lower left-hand corner, it says 12/27/04. So the question is, if that was created then for the 06. But I think that we have numbers in here that only go through 04. So that...
Yeah.
That probably the database they're using on there. But
Mr.
Yes.
Chair, I follow up.
Representative Grunberg.
Do you have a regular, I assume you have a regular annual plan that states what the department's supposed to do on an annual year and when they're supposed to do it? Because I'm a little bit curious, if you have such a plan, how you could get so far behind.
I'm not feeling like we are far behind. I mean, we are, in terms of our missions and measures, where this gets completed every year. And like I said, and I am a little, this 2004, this would be the one that was completed just as I came on board. And then there's one that I completed for this other one. And so I'm not sure where the disconnect. The only thing I can think of is the discrepancy between the fiscal year, so that you report on the year that just completed, and we're in the middle of fiscal year 06.
Right, and I think what this is you're working on data completed for 04. You work on your missions and measures maybe in 05, so you don't have 05 data for fiscal year 06. And so, you know, there's that lag time in data prep is
right.
Or the data is available. And hopefully we'll have this 2005 data that we can add on to the bottom, because right now in on page 2 of this, 2006. You'll see that the most current recent data we have is 2004. But would you, I guess if you would lead us through this, we have two end results here, mm-hmm. and strategies that are listed for the department, and then the major activities and advanced strategies, and those are things that we're quite concerned with. And like I say, we realize that you've come on into the position, so mm-hmm. again, don't take this as us saying that you didn't do something 2 years ago when you weren't here. So
I do apologize to
that's both fine. Of you. So if we look at the major activities and advanced strategies, mm-hmm. which is quite a bit what we're talking about, conduct site RFP process, allocate funds, mm-hmm. and write federal RFPs. I presume that that's that ongoing funding process.
Right.
Conduct on-site audits. Have we conducted on-site audits of the, I presume this is the people that the grantees?
Right. Yes, and yes, we do. Matter of fact, I've been very, very impressed coming. I have done that in the past in my previous life. I've did auditing, and it's a very good system that we have here.
So were these annual audits of every program, or what audits were done for these? And, I mean, I don't see in the anything in the report here that lists the audit section at all.
The schedule is a 2-year cycle, so we go out 2 years unless there's issues, and then we will go out on an annual basis depending on what it is that needs to be addressed. But basically, we audit most of them on a 2-year cycle. These programs go across the state. We have programs in Barrow as well as in Unalaska, and so travel is a consideration, which is why they are done on a 2-year cycle. However, when you're doing an audit, you want to make sure that if there are issues, you do follow up, so that we will go ahead and do that. So if we need to, we will audit on an annual basis.
Okay. And then we just talked about the database. Participate in planning, coordination, and implementation of workshops. Mm-hmm. What workshops were conducted in FY06?
We had the Tribal State Forums. That was a GTA grant. It's Grants to Encourage Arrest that we've got. We've written for it again and hope to be able to get it again because it's been a very popular training program, and that has gone around the state. We've had, I'm not sure the exact number of forums we've had. Actually, I can find out here real quickly.
I guess one of our problems is that we have these activities and advanced strategies, but there's no delineation within the missions mm-hmm. and measures of saying how they were accomplished.
Right.
And so, you know, it's a list of plan or develop, but then there's nothing
right
for us. So it would be very helpful in our process to be able to do that. Then we have conduct needs assessments. Does the council do needs assessments, or is that done by the local folks that come and apply for grants?
I don't know of one we've done recently that's a formalized needs assessment. It's something that, as we're moving forward and looking at the plans that we're building, we need to do. For instance, as I was talking earlier in the Department of Education, what is out there that's a needs assessment? What's currently existing? Where do we need to build? Does every school district have training that's going on? If not, what curriculars are already out there? So that's a need assessment that we're needing to move forward, that we will be doing with the Department of Education as we try to address the issues and the concerns raised by the Sunset Audit.
Okay. And if we go to page 2, I'm looking at the results performance measure details here, and I was trying to, we have two A and B on the front page there, performance measures. And the first one says 10% increase in shelter support services to victims, domestic violence, sexual assault, or other violent crimes. And then it appears that if you look down the table, the total count of incidents is decreasing.
Mm-hmm.
So does that mean, I mean, if we have a 10%, if our goal is a 10% increase in shelter services and we're getting less days in shelters, does that mean, I mean, it seems to me that that's saying we're failing in our goal. Or is this supposed to indicate that we've gotten this much better in that there isn't a requirement for shelter services?
This is one of the measures I don't care for much because it's you're going to have fluctuation in uses of shelter that are just based on, I don't know, the moon. Where you'll just get dips in where sometimes you're going to have a whole lot of people in. It goes in cycles. I can remember when I worked in a shelter, we had one year where we had every family had like five kids, and so we were enormously full for about a month. And then we cycled out where we were very few. And so you're going to get normal dips and valleys that go from year to year as well as from month to month or even week to week.
Well, Barb, I understand that, but we're looking at,
right.
You know, we don't have 2005, but 2001 is 9,997, 2002, 7,535, 2003, 7,653, and then 2004, the most current, 7,372.
Mm-hmm.
So we've seemed to have had a pretty steady decline of the incidents, and I guess incidents means the support services
mm-hmm.
that we're saying we're going. I mean, I'm having trouble
right.
interpreting this, and if I'm interpreting it wrong, that's fine. Yeah, Representative Grimberg,
could this be reflective of reduced funding?
Could be. It's also can be through the chair. Can also be reflective of how we're gathering data.
Well, my question was
yeah.
was kind of. Do you know what the funding has been over the last 4 years? Has there been reduced funding?
The funding has fluctuated and has been reduced over the years, and then we've had peaks. I mean, and I didn't bring my five-year budget. I'm sorry.
Do you remember?
Representative Grimm, follow-up.
Thank you. I'm sorry,
sorry.
Mr. Chair. Has there been... Do you have any idea of what the funding has been? Would this seem to be consistent with the reduced funding?
Through the chair, I would love to, I hadn't thought about that, and I think that's a very good question.
Oh.
Thank you.
Please, go right ahead if you need to refer to anything.
Okay.
Take your time.
It appears that that table in the audit, you want to refer us to that?
Sure.
Barbara?
It's page 15 in the audit.
Of the audit in that blue-bound book.
If you want your staff to come up with you or somebody to come up, that's fine. I don't if that's okay with the chair. We just need some answers.
My budget person's currently in at a conference.
Training.
Actually, on strategic planning, on how to do strategic planning.
Good. So we're on page 15 of the audit.
Yes. So if you look at the years,
wouldn't seem to indicate. Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair.
And we're not meaning to put you on the spot. We're just trying to interpret what the missions and measures are. So if and whether we're, you know, accomplishing or addressing those. Target number two for that result A was a 5% increase in coordinated training, educational workshops. And then we look at the statewide training functions, and it went from 2,390 in 2001 down to 1,700 2004, which is 20 or 25% decrease.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I'm having a hard time figuring out if we're accomplishing these missions or if we're actually, the data is showing that we're not accomplishing the missions and we're going the wrong way. So I guess this is where we're coming from and saying we would like to see a strategic plan to address these. I mean, unless I'm reading them wrong, it seems to be that that's what that's saying, is that the goal, the target is to 5% increase in coordinated target educational workshops, and there's been almost 25. Like I say, it'd be very helpful to have the 2005 numbers. Those mm-hmm. should probably be available.
I can find this out. I noticed this is it says by grant, by the CDVSA grantees, but I would assume we'd also want to include the training or the forum that we did.
And I'm not sure how this.
And I'm not sure how these numbers were combined either.
And then if we look at the next page, which is result B, which is work towards longer-term solutions and root causes, and the target is 5% reduction in domestic violence, sexual assault, and other violent crimes. And we, our first year here is 2000, which is 2,587. And now that's up to 27,540. Mm-hmm. So it seems we're going the wrong way. Instead of a 5% reduction, we've got over a 10% increase. And so I guess my problem with looking at the missions and measures is we really need to see a strategic plan to address what those are. And if you've done a new missions and measures, or mm-hmm. I guess they've relabeled them as strategies and results and strategies, that would be really helpful if you share that with the committee.
Sure.
Yes. Representative Gardner, sorry.
Thank you. I actually had similar concerns and questions, and it's really hard from these missions and measures to understand what's going on. For example, on the measure to you're saying the target is long-term solutions, and there's an increase in number of incidents. That could also be that the level of domestic violence hasn't changed or even has gone down, but there's better reporting or better identification, and that could be a positive result of the work the council's doing. But I think the measure is not well designed because it doesn't tell you really anything meaningful.
And, you know, what I'd like to do is, we do have some of the council members here, and they may be able to shed some light on that, because they've been, like I say, again, mm-hmm. you haven't been here for this full period, so no one is trying to say keep this on your shoulders, and you're in a hard position here because we're asking some pretty tough questions based on the data we have. And maybe we could get Mr. Hogan, would you like to come forward, and maybe you could shed some data, some light for us? Would that be appropriate as a council member? And just let us know whether we're interpreting these wrong.
For the record, my name's Bill Hogan. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of Health and Social Services. If Mr. Chair, if you're looking for someone to shed light on what's transpired on the council prior to about 6 months ago, I would suggest that you talk to other council members, because I've only been on the council for 6 months. So I would like to be able to help you, but I'm not sure I could share much light. I certainly could share the Department of Health and Social Services perspective and the importance of working with the council. But if you would like clarification, I would suggest that perhaps Commissioner Tandesky, Susan Park, or some other individuals might be more helpful.
Yes, and thank you very much for letting us know. And Mr. Tandesky is online. Are you on there, Commissioner?
I am, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning. Have you been following our conversations here this morning?
Yes, sir, I have.
And so what we're doing is looking through the missions and measures and looking, trying to find out a strategic plan and trying to find out how we're addressing it and whether we are, whether there's something that we need to do to be more effectively addressing the program. Can you, you probably don't have these missions and measures in front of you, do you?
I do not. I do. I guess I would have a couple of comments if that's acceptable.
It sure is. Go ahead and would you go ahead and introduce yourself for the record as well?
Yes, sir. For the record, Bill Tandesky, Commissioner of Public Safety. Mr. Chairman, I appreciated Representative Gardner's comments. I was thinking the same thing as she said it, that these numbers are very hard to weave into something meaningful because we do want more reporting of something that both on the domestic violence and sexual assault side that we know historically are tremendously underreported crimes. And so we want more reporting, and that when you do get more reporting, that means that the programs out there in the field are having a positive impact. So it's really hard to get your arms around. I heard Representative Gruenberg's question about funding, and while I don't have those numbers in front of me, I think that probably what the funding streams have suffered from are flat funding, and we all know how that erodes budgets. There's been some fluctuation in funding sources. Last year, with the legislature's support, we added, I want to say, about $1.2 million of GF to replace other funding streams that had gone away. Additionally, there was another $200,000 added in amendment on the House side that was adopted. So there was a little bit of a cost of living bump there. But I think that the support for what the network and the council does remains strong. The funding has been not very stable in terms of the multiple sources that are out there. Your questions about strategic planning are well-founded. We've had those discussions within the council that the accountability for results. But the domestic violence and sexual assault, the entire issue is so all-encompassing that involves law enforcement and prosecution and health and social services program that it's really hard to get your arms around it. But having been involved in it as a police officer, as a trooper, starting in 1973, I can tell you that we are so far ahead and continue to make progress, but we are so far ahead of where we were back in those days in terms of statutory authority and support for programs. But I think that stability is the key that we're looking for. I think it's very hard for us to do our jobs in working with the network programs if in an unstable environment. Strategies require long-term planning, and long-term planning is difficult when you're really operating year to year.
Thank you. And Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When I look at these figures, reported of incidents or reported to the law enforcement, I see the increase being more the fact that your outreach program and the services you provide have improved to the point that you're getting more response to the program. Not that there's a failure there, but that it shows success and more people are willing to participate. Is that a possibility?
Through the chair, Representative Elkin, that is certainly a possibility. Also, as population of the state grows, one might expect more incidents of all sorts of crimes. And I think as law enforcement expands and is better trained, you also see those numbers go up. So I would like to think, and I would defer to Barbara or representatives of the network, but I've got a lot of confidence in the outreach they do that improves reporting.
But, Mr. Tandiesi, you're not saying from this graph that we've got that goes from 2000 at 25,787 to FY03, which was the latest year, which was in this report at 27,540, when our goal is a 5% decrease in domestic violence, that other than just saying, well, it's possible, I mean, we're not, I mean, if we're not using this data to identify some reasons for this, then there's no use having a measure of it. I mean, if we're going to say that we have a goal of a 5% reduction, and no matter what the numbers show, if it's an increase, it's just going to be better reporting, and if it's a decrease, that's fine. I mean, there's no use even reporting it, is there, if we're not going to have some way of investigating and developing what these results mean?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that, and I'll be quite frank with you, I'm not a big fan of missions and measures for this very reason. I think numbers can be interpreted and need to be interpreted and over the long haul. And the very fact of the matter is, and I'll give you a great crime for this kind of an example, is sexual abuse of a minor. Again, terribly underreported. Folks might raise their eyebrows when I say I want to see those numbers go up, but I do, because I know what's going on. I want it reported. And so, yes, I agree with you that those numbers are difficult to interpret, but it doesn't change the fact that it's a terribly underreported crime, and we need to work on getting more of it reported. I personally, as I look at missions and measures for my whole department, I really try to stay away from, I'm going to reduce homicides by 10%. Well, I'd love to do that, but I'm not sure that that's totally going to be within my reach to do that.
Okay, and I guess the one other thing we have in this missions and majors is the batterers intervention program. And for 2006, there's zero full-time and zero part-time personnel attributed to this program, where it's core service to develop the prison batterers intervention program and also develop and implement standardized collection for state-approved batteries intervention programs and oversee an audit. Has that fallen off of the list for the council, or was that being addressed some other way?
Mr. Chairman, that's probably a better question for Barbara. I believe that the BIP programs standards are ran through the Department of Corrections, but I'll defer to Barbara.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Gatto had a question, Bill.
Yeah, Commissioner, you mentioned that interpreting numbers, and I actually don't interpret numbers. I simply look at them and evaluate whether or not we've met a goal. If we haven't met a goal, let's say, you know, you give somebody $100 a day for 5 days. You say you'll get $500. At the end of the week, they only worked 4 days. So they've missed the goal. But if there was a piece that said the reason we have not met a 5% decrease is, and somehow a justification, but actually when we haven't met a decrease but have actually seen an increase, then it is essential that we have an explanation or a justification. And could be that you said, well, we expected $1 million, we only had 500,000. That would help. But when you have missions and measures, whether you like them or not, measuring is what we do to discover if indeed we've met a goal. And aside from measuring, we could be subjective forever. but I really work best with numbers when they're available, and they are available here. So I guess what I'm asking is, if there's some reason we haven't met a measure, I bet you there's a that somebody knows the reason. And short of that, I'm very reluctant to looking at this bill to grant this enormous extension of time when it looks like maybe we ought to do a lot less than what the bill is asking. And so that's what I'm trying to keep in the back of my mind. We're not meeting the goals, and yet we want to extend it as if we were doing a great job.
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, I think collectively the council and the network are doing a great job. And I think that there are certainly things to be improved upon, as with probably any program. But again, there are so many factors that go into these numbers, whether they're economic issues when economy and job situations are bad, where perhaps victims have fewer options. And so I heard, I think last year, that some shelters were well up. They were having longer stays because battered women had such fewer options available to them. There are those kinds of things that have to be evaluated, and those evaluations do become subjective.
And Mr. Dandieski, that's one of our problems here, is that the first measure here was a goal was a 10% increase in shelter support, and yet that's decreased by about 25% as well. And so we're trying to figure these out. Representative Gruenberg has a question. Is this for Mr. Dandieski or for Barbara?
No, for Mr. Dandieski.
Representative Gruenberg?
Commissioner, you were talking about the funding sources, and the information we have is from page 15 of the audit report. And it indicates, and actually page 14, that the community-based batterers intervention programs had their budget reduced from $320,000 to $200,000 in FY04. And then on Exhibit 1 on page 15 of the report, the audit report by LB&A, which goes from FY02 through FY05, it looks to me like general fund appropriations went down from $5.1 million to $4.9 million. To $4.2 million, to $4 million. And on the other hand, the feds seem to be going up from $2.3 million to $3 million to $4.5 million to $3.6 million. That's a little dip. But the interagency receipts seem to fluctuate quite a bit, particularly from the Department of Health and Social Services, 1.4, 1.6, then down to 0.5 million, then to a million. Just wildly fluctuating. On the other hand, the expenses, the grants to programs, started to go up from 8 million to 8.6 million to 8.2 to 7.7. Except for the 1 year they went up, the grants went down, but travel went from 54,000 to 48,000 to 87,000 to 117,000. I mean, these are all over the place. Can you explain what's going on?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, no, I can't. Although the council resides in my department, it is not the day-to-day operational. And those budget issues are handled by the council staff, not by me.
I would ask through the chair, if I may follow up, please.
Representative Gruenberg.
To Ms. Mason, can you explain what's going on? Same question to you, ma'am.
Again, I can state that travel is a big part of what we're doing in order to get out to the programs, and also we have travel for mandated trainings. Also, we've used some of the money, for instance, in this last year, we sent some of the programs out to the trainings that are mandated by some of the, like the Safe Havens program. So, but in terms of being able to specific as why fiscal year 05 had that much and the difference between, I'd have to check with my budget person who, like I stated, is currently at a training.
And thank you on that. And I just want to point out that general fund allocations and those receipt authorities are our purview, and some of that comes down to the legislature and where we establish priorities, and that's one of the things why we're having our meeting here and talking about them.
If I may follow up to the chair
Representative Groomer.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds to me like you're getting significantly less support from the legislative funding. And I know that Ms. Mason wasn't here, but Commissioner Tandesky was and was presumably present during those budget discussions. Does it appear that there's less legislative support through the chair, Commissioner?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, that is not my sense. I believe there is strong legislative support. As I pointed out, that there was a drop-off in other funding sources last year, and the legislature added $1.4 million GF. So I think the support has been there, but again, I think it's difficult, particularly for the programs that we fund through the council, that we all know that, you know, a five-year plan is pretty difficult when you're month-to-month, year-to-year, trying to pay those heating bills. So it's really hard, I think, on the programs, which is what this is really all about, the end result here, that for them to operate without a strong funding, consistent funding, and as you pointed out, that if nothing else, the sources are all over the board.
Thank you, Commissioner. And, you know, from our perspective here, you know, we're not really reviewing those individual programs. We think that the council's done a good job, it appears, on doing the funding part of this, their statutory requirements. Our questions revolve around the other statutory requirements of developing and coordinating programs and making sure that the individual departments develop programs within the departments to address this and the trainings. And so we are much less inclined to talk about the individual programs that you fund because we think that the council has done a good job there. What we're looking at is trying to figure out whether we have currently enough information on a strategic plan of development and strategic plan for accomplishing the other statutorily required portions of the council to go forward with, as the bill has for extending the council as it is, as it's functioning through 2014. And I share Representative Gatto's view that, you know, I don't think we're there. I think we're not there because we need to see more plan, more strategic planning, and saying how are we going to accomplish those statutorily required functions. And so, you know, as we've said before, this is an extremely important part of what happens in our state, and there's no question about that. Our only question is how do we most effectively get there? Representative Grimmer.
Yeah, just one follow-up. Commissioner, you talked about, in, it sounded like, was it 05 that you got the extra million, or was it in fiscal 06?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, I believe 06.
So it wouldn't be reflected on the figures we have here. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Could we get the auditor back up again?
Mm. For the record, Pat Davidson, representing the Division of Legislative Audit.
Hi, Pat. Could you just let us know a little bit on the, when something comes up to a sunset, the audit requirement for that sunset date, what happened?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. The sunset process, to a large extent, is defined in legislation, Title 4466. Most of the, and I, as I look at this committee, I realize that sunset audits are not, while we produce them annually and to a large degree, many members of this committee haven't seen them before, and I probably should have expanded on my remarks earlier. However, what the legislation does is it establishes the criteria on which boards and commissions should be evaluated. In the audit report under analysis of public need, we identify what those statutory criteria are. Is it operating in the public's best interest? Are there budgetary, statutory, or other items that impede the work of the organization and so forth?
And how about the timing of when that comes due?
Initially, the way that it worked prior to the change last year, boards and commissions were to be extended for a period of not to exceed 4 years. And also the boards, if they have a termination date, they're given 1 year to conclude administratively their actions. So if the legislature fails to take an action to extend a date, an extension or a termination date, for the council, we're talking June 30, 2006, they would have 1 year to administratively wind down, and then they go away, basically. During the last legislative session, that not to exceed period changed from 4 years to 8 years. A lot of the discussion centered around, while we do probably about 20 boards and commissions that are under sunset, most of them are occupational in nature. Maybe less than a dozen are more programmatic evaluations. So the statute right now sets the extension dates for a period not to exceed 8 years. It is totally up to the legislature as to whether they want to extend it 8 years or feel comfortable in something less or even in something more.
Okay. Thank you. And your, if we have a statutory date of next year, mm-hmm. would that trigger an audit by you, a pre, pre-expiration audit, or when does a pre-expiration audit come in, or does that have to be a requested audit?
Mr. Chairman, again, by statute, we are required to have an audit presented to the legislature the January before the termination date. So if you extended this board for 1 year to June 30, 2007, that means we'll be knocking on the council's door in a few weeks to start an audit so that we can then present a report to the legislature.
Okay, thank you. And I had another question on the audit. Drew up the flagged the question of the network. In fact, that's the other portion of the bill. After consultation with the network on domestic violence, they'll submit a list to the governor of persons recommended for appointment, and that was drawn up as a flagging in the audit about a conflict of interest. And I'm trying to figure out the conflict. I mean, it's the network recommends some names to the governor. The governor may or may not appoint from that list. But it, I guess what I'm trying to do is figure out, it seems that the network, which is all of those folks across the state, I believe, that are programmatically involved, it seems that they would have the the coordination and the knowledge of the people that are out in the field the most, and nominating an individual to the or the individuals to the governor. It doesn't, I mean, it seems to me as quite a stretch to have a conflict of interest. It's almost like if they're not making those recommendations, it's almost like if any program or anyone made a recommendation to the governor, there's an automatic conflict of interest. And can you explain this a little more detail to us?
Initially, when the legislation was established, the network was not a grantee of the council or of the council. In more recent years, the network, not only do they get funds through their Violence Against Women Act grants, which is a federal program, a lot more scrutiny to that, but there's also some discretionary money that comes. And so the concern is that if you are the organization that is established in statute to be making recommendations, and that the governor, by statute, is to consider your recommendations, that members that are appointed to the council, possibly recommended by the network, might carry or appear to carry an interest of the network. And when the network is competing for funds with all the other programs, it's slight. We are not trying to tie the hands of the governor, but having one particular nonprofit identified in statute at that level didn't appear to be necessary. Anybody can make recommendations to the governor. The governor can consider anybody he wants to place on the council. It's just taking one organization and establishing it in statute. There's not a firm conflict of interest, but it didn't appear to be necessary to appoint members to the council. Okay. And in that vein, we just recommended that it be deleted.
Thanks. Representative Grunberg.
I'd like just a question, a slightly off the subject question. Where is the statute, Ms. Davidson, that sets forth when the expiration date for various boards and commissions, I'm talking about licensing boards. There's one statute that has a whole list of when their expiration date. Can you cite me that statute, please?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, there's two statutes. Those for occupational boards are in Title 08, so they're 0801 or 0803. And the other that has non-occupational boards.
No, I'm talking about occupational boards.
Occupational boards, Title 08.
Okay, 0801 or 0803.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Does anyone else have any other questions? We had some people online to answer questions, but they're all to answer questions. There's no one for testimony. Representative Gardner.
Thank you. I guess this is for probably Pat, but maybe both of you. What about the issue of having at least one council member who is a victim of domestic violence, sexual assault, or related, a family member? Would you recommend that? I mean, we had that as an issue last year when we were talking about state retirement boards, whether stakeholders should be represented on the board or not. And I think it's generally understood that stakeholders should be on boards.
I'll start. Through the chair, Representative Gardner, that's up to the legislature how they wish to do it. From an audit consideration point, we, looking back through the reports, we have not had any concerns with regard to the composition of the board. Doesn't mean that the legislature can't choose to change that. Just from an audit perspective, we've not identified any deficiencies or that the composition of the board as it exists has caused any problems.
Thank you.
Okay, follow-up, Representative Gardner?
Thank you. Maybe Barbara would answer that, too, from her perspective.
From my perspective is that I think we probably have had victims that have been represented on the board, not all people that have been victims of violent crime or sexual assault or wanting to identify themselves that way. But I do know that we've had some public members that are that way, that have been, or not public, but state as well as public, from information I've received. I don't think any board members or the council has any objection to having a victim or somebody who's had a family member represented. I think it'd almost be hard to avoid with the instances of domestic violence not to know somebody that has been a victim or been victimized themselves, hopefully not so many there. But there's that limiting factor. You know, if somebody has to declare, I am a victim of domestic violence, and then be on the board, you then are setting up a limitation as to who can be put on the board. I wouldn't mind, you know, showing an interest, but that's the only thing I see with it. There's no real objection to that. It's just, where would the limitation come from? And we may already and have already had victims or people who have had family members be victim represented. They just may not be willing to state that out front.
Thank you.
Okay. And Barbara, what I'd like to do is have you get back to the committee on the missions and measures that you have for 2005, and also the plan. But I don't want to hold this up for that. But what we would like you to do is communicate with us. First of all, are there any amendments to be offered? Representative Gatto.
Yeah. Excuse me. Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'm going to offer an amendment partly because, you know, in light of what Pat Davidson said, for her to have to jump right in and do a new audit right away, that I'm going to sort of do some audits besides this. And this would take preference over mine anyway, because I think it's more important. So more specifically, I'm going to expect to see everybody back here in 2 years with this amendment, and that is to change the date from, is it 2016?
2014.
I'm sorry, 2014 to 2008, with the accompanying letter dealing with a strategic plan to accomplish the goals set in statute.
And so that was a motion by Representative Gatto for page 2, line 14, to change 2014 to 2008. Do I hear any objections to amendment number 1? There's an objection. Would you like to speak to your objection?
I just don't think there's any need for it. I think I think they really, if you look at their record, it's like looking at a glass, is it half full or is it half empty? And when I look at some of the statistics here, I see they're half full, not half empty. And I don't have any problem at all supporting it for 14 years.
Okay. Are there any other?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Grunberg.
I didn't realize you were planning to move the bill today.
The objections maintained. Madam Chair, would you call the roll? And this is on amendment number 1 to page 2, line 14, changing the sunset date from 2014 to 2008.
Representative Ramros.
No.
Representative Gardner.
Yes.
Representative Grunberg.
Yes.
Representative Gatto.
Yes.
Representative Elkins.
No.
Representative Lynn.
Yes.
Chair Seaton.
Yes.
5 yea, 2 nay.
With that, amendment number 1 is adopted. Page 2, line 14, changing the sunset date to June 30th, 2008. And
Mr. Chair.
There was a accompanying letter requesting a strategic plan to address the goals set in statute. And so that letter will go from our committee addressing to the council as to what we'd like to see you come back to us with.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunberg.
Are we going to have any other testimony? Anybody else testifying on this
there
bill?
There is no one else signed up to testify.
Well, okay. Then.
Or wait a minute. There. We don't have them on the list here. There's somebody out there that would like to testify. So we will go to public testimony. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to testify? Would you come forward and state your name for the record?
Good morning, everyone. My name is Peggy Brown. I am the executive director for the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. I just wanted to say a few things. I also have some information here for you if you would like to review it. This is called, and some of you may have seen it. We've passed this out. It's called The Challenge, Victim Safety in Alaska, and it has a lot of statistics. And then we also have an annual report, which many of you have already seen, but I would like for you to also have this. In the one sheet of paper, what you'll see is kind of a snapshot of what's been going on in Alaska and with domestic violence and sexual assault in the last few years. For instance, in the last 10 years, you know, to address kind of Commissioner Tandesky's issue of funding, we've had a 4% increase and over 43% request in services. So that's one issue. The second one is the network would like to remain in statute as recommending names to the governor. While we do receive a small percentage of our budget comes from a grant, it's a federal grant, as Ms. Davidson mentioned, it is discretionary money. That discretionary money is open for people to apply in an RFP process. A lot of what we use that money for is, you know, continuing legal education of legal advocates across the state. The council's been in existence for 25 years. The network's been in existence for almost 26 years. You know, initially the network helped set up the council, and it became a very model protocol in that it was housed within public safety because domestic violence and sexual assault are public safety issues. So the network and the council have worked closely together off and on for the past 25 years. Now, there has been undoubtedly a lot of turnover at the council. And there hasn't been so much in my office, my agency, which is the coalition that represents all of the programs across the state, a nonprofit entity. So Barbara and I have an extremely good relationship. We actually have a lot of wonderful plans to try and get things done in this state that have been remiss in the last few years. Some of those things have to do with funding. Some of those things have to do with training. A lot of it has to do with technical assistance. You know, domestic violence and sexual assault is no longer as private and as hidden an issue as it once was. We now have, there's federal money that goes towards providing training and technical assistance. Now, that federal money doesn't go directly to the programs to keep the doors open. That's kind of what the state has been tasked to do. And just in closing, I just wanted to say that we're very supportive of the council. We think that, you know, we could all be doing a better job. You have a new director who's very passionate. You have a council board that is very informed. We believe that the public members should represent the public and I guess that's all I wanted to say, really. And any questions that you might have, I would be happy to answer. I have been around at the network for 10 years and have a history there, so please feel free to ask me any questions you'd like.
I'd like to just ask you one question. That is, in the, you know, we're talking about a slight, though a perception of conflict of interest in here, and that's why we're looking, I can't find it right now, deletion of that as far as recommending names to the governor. Do you see that as really any impairment to your ability to recommend to the governor names? It doesn't appear that they've always, I mean, in the last five, there's only been two that have been selected from the list that you guys have nominated. So, I mean, would you continue to nominate people to the list?
Representative Seaton, that's a good question. We probably would continue to nominate, although it's quite a process. You know, to get somebody who's willing to serve as a public member who has knowledge about domestic violence and sexual assault, you know, whether that's a businessman, a dentist, a nurse, or someone who's a survivor, I honestly don't know if we would continue. I would think that that would probably fall upon the council to do that or some other agency. We would, of course, maybe make recommendations every now and then. But right now, as it stands, for instance, the last public member, we knew that the board was comprised of pretty state-heavy people, and we wanted a rural member on there. So we really had to kind of go out into the field, if you will, and get a rural person who had expertise and knowledge on domestic violence and sexual assault. And that took a good bit of doing. Does that answer your question?
Sure, and I can understand if you're kind of required to make the nominations in statute, that's something, some work that you're going to do, whereas if it's not there, it may not happen.
And I would, if I could just add to that, you know, you had a letter from the chair of the council in the back portion of the audit, Janice Stewart. And Janice says that the expertise and knowledge of the network far outweighs any potential or theoretical conflict. And I would just end by saying that if you look deep enough, I imagine if you look deep enough within the council makeup and the commissioners, you know, you can find theoretical conflicts. In some ways, we're trying to fix what's not broken. This is a relationship that has worked. There has never been a conflict of interest. It is an appearance, potentially.
Thank you. Representative Gatto.
Thank you. Just yesterday, we had a meeting from the Committee on Post-Secondary Education, and let me tell you, we had a lot of disagreements. But the whole process works towards essentially the student loan program and making good education available. But the conflict is there. Similarly, I know every member on this panel, and every one of us goes far out of their way to see to it that the state addresses the problem of domestic violence and sexual assault. We know by hearing other bills and dealing with the public constantly, a major issue, so we're not going to let this organization disappear. But the organization itself is the question, is it efficiently pursuing the goals that we have in statute and certainly among ourselves? So when we agreed, for the most part, to say, see you in 2 years, we're not saying you're going to go away and, as Ms. Davison said, we're not in the wind-down phase. That's 2 years instead of one. What we'd like to see is a fairly efficient and goal-oriented program. And if you can't meet some objective, well, we understand you can't be perfect. No one, we're imperfect too. But let us address the faults that we find. And we personally, I would like to see you look into the organization itself. Whether you have people on the board that maybe represent different groups. You know, I count there are seven people on the panel and a couple of secretaries. I would bet you that in this group of nine, we have people who are have a very close relationship with either domestic violence or sexual assault or both. It's not hard to get somebody that's had an association with that. I bet it's relatively easy. So the makeup of the board is not a crisis for us. But the question exists, is there a conflict of interest? When we ask that, it's not an accusation. It's, let's take a look. And similarly, the rest of this legislation. So I just wanted to make it clear from a personal point of view that the 2 years, see you back in 2 years, is really important to us to see if we are on task for reaching out to the community and accomplishing what we'd like to see. And maybe money is the issue. Maybe it's not. Maybe the programs excuse me, are an issue, and maybe they're not. But that's what we want to see again. So, and besides, one more thing. In 2 years, committees will have changed, and you might, won't see the same people here, I'm fairly certain.
Absolutely.
So we need to remember that, you know, you'll be talking to some new people for sure, or likely. And they'll be interested maybe in something even different.
Sorry, I thought I told you.
Just be prepared. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Grimberg.
Are you ready? I don't have any questions. Are you still in test?
Oh, no. Does anyone else have any other questions? Thank you very much. Is there anyone else that wants to testify on Senate Bill 250?
She had a statement, I thought. Mr. Chairman, did you want to make a statement? You started to, and then...
Oh, I was just going to, through the chair, Representative Gatto. I definitely hear what you're saying, and I appreciate your point of view, and I understand and fully recognize that sometimes it's necessary to create a space to get people to move into in order to improve things and tweak things. And I appreciate everyone's passion and devotion and knowledge on domestic violence and sexual assault. You know, 10 years ago, I'd have to be knocking on doors just to try and get the issue discussed. So thank you very much for your words.
Is there anyone else to testify? Seeing no one else wishing to testify, I'll close is there anyone online? No. I'll close public testimony. And Representative Grimberg.
Are we ready to mark the bill up?
Yes, we are.
Okay. I'd like to make an amendment, and then I'd like to take up the subject of a letter of intent separately.
Okay, fine. And just for everybody's knowledge, we did take something a little out of order, but we did make an amendment to the bill. And then we came back to public hearing, but the amendment we already did adopt was changing to 2008. Representative Grimberg.
This would be amendment number two, Mr. Chair, and I would move that we strike sections one and two of the bill and that we make a conforming amendment to the title, which would eliminate everything on line two and three after the semicolon on line two, and that we introduce a House concurrent resolution suspending the rule for that purpose and introduce, I'll make that as a separate motion.
Yeah, that'll be done automatically for us. So your amendment is to strike sections one and two and eliminate the semicolon on line two through line three assault in the title.
Okay,
and so we have an objection. So just for clarification, so the substance of your amendment would be that the network would remain in the system for nominating or recommending persons for appointment by the governor.
That's correct. And since there is an objection, may I speak to the amendment?
Yes, you may.
Okay.
Yes.
That was an inaudible objection.
The objection was for Representative Gatto.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Representative Grimberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It seems to me that the network is a very important aspect of this process. They are knowledgeable, They have been involved, and they have a broad base of membership and representation across the Alaska domestic violence community, that it is essential that they be included. The governor can appoint whoever he or she wishes, but this is simply a little additional input. And I realize that this does mention a specific nonprofit corporation, which is a little unusual, but this is a unique organization. I can't think of any other organization like it in other spheres, and there may be, but I just can't think of one. And I hate to fall on the sword of theoretical purity. I'd rather get the real input here. And again, nobody has said that there's a problem with the way the system is working. If anything, I think that having the network involved strengthens the system. So I would hope that the objection could be removed and we could keep the system the way it is.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you. I actually support the amendment for many of the reasons that the sponsor has said, but I'd like to add that the network has been in existence and has a longer history. I think testimony was 25 years or so. And given that there is no problem with the current functioning, and given that the governor is in no way obligated to accept the recommendations, that I don't see why we would need to dismantle something that seems to be working well and representing the entire state, which the network does, urban and rural, native, non-native, whatever, across the board.
May I respond?
I would just like to say that, I thought we had some pretty valuable testimony in that if the network was not required to do this, it's a lot of work that they may not do searching out other areas. And I think that the audit has identified this as a possible, although slight, conflict of interest, but I don't think that conflict rises to the level that we would lose the that we should risk losing the mandate of the network to forward names to the governor. And so Representative Gatto.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. The amendment would get rid of the requirement for the Commissioner of Public Safety, Health and Social Services, Education, the Attorney General,
Representative Gatto, the amendment would remove these sections from the bill so that they would stay as they currently are. All the language, the commissioners, the network, are currently in statute, and so all it would do is keep the current process in place.
Mr. Chair?
Do you maintain your objection? Representative Gatto has removed his objection.
I will object.
Representative Ramos objects. Ramos, do you want to speak to your objection?
No, I don't.
Representative Grunberg.
Two things. Just one for the record. The Section 1, for the record, and Section 2 do not affect anything except whether the governor shall have the consultation with the network. They doesn't affect these other commissioners at all. And secondly, I'd like to point out that the administration itself hasn't said that they don't want to continue consulting with the network. They haven't said, come in and taken a position on this bill and said, we like the fact that you're eliminating the network. Therefore, I can't conclude that they specifically want to eliminate the network.
Thank you, Representative. Is there further comment? Representative Lynn, did you have a question?
What is the feelings of both the council and the network on this amendment? Do we have any idea where they are on this? Since these are the two entities that are trying to accomplish the same goal, basically.
Well, we have the network has just come before us and said that they wish to be involved, and the council.
Should we ask the council?
I don't know, the executive director. Do we have a him.
I stated at the end of my testimony that we supported the bill as it stood.
Okay. So does the council, has the council taken a policy decision that it does not want the recommendation of the network?
No, basically it's what our stance has been is a, either way, the network can continue to make recommendations as they do now, whether they are in the statute or not. Currently, the governor can or cannot, to us, it doesn't change anything.
No, to us, are you talking about you as the executive director, okay, or are you talking about the council has taken a policy position that they want to eliminate the nomination process as is currently in this bill?
I spoke with all of the council members, and each of the council members said that the network can make recommendations regardless of whether or not they are in statute. And also the governor can accept or cannot accept the recommendations whether or not they are in statute. My sense from the council members is that either way, it doesn't change anything. So that I wouldn't say it was a policy statement because I did that by contacting each of the members. I don't think they would object either way.
Okay, thank you. Pat, did you want to make another comment from the auditor?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Pat Davidson representing the Division of Legislative Audit. Actually, the recommendation with regard to eliminating the network was in current status of a prior audit recommendation. The last time we did the council sunset review in 2001, we had some problems with some of the grants going to the network. Some of the things that we saw happening is that the network had modified their final grant prohibiting the council from reviewing the records. That was in 2001. In the year 2000, requests for reimbursements from the network were not supported by sufficient documentation of expenditures. And in 2001 and 2000, the network was excluded from the monitoring schedule of the council. And as we were following up in those recommendations, that's originally where that recommendation to eliminate the network came from. We looked at and in that council, as opposed to the current council, more of the members had been recommended by the network. That it's a conflict of interest appearance only. When we saw issues like that, where the network was excluded from monitoring, was changing their grant agreements, none of the other grantees were doing this. That's the genesis of the recommendation that had been made. And then in the 2005 report that you're looking at now, that you have copies of, what we're giving you is the current status of that recommendation. And it doesn't bring all that history with it, per se. It just moves forward the recommendations. But I just thought it would be important for the for you to hear what the genesis of that recommendation was from an audit standpoint.
Reverend Gardner.
Thank you. Is it fair to say that the problems that were identified in the 2001 audit, at least the problems relating to the network's participation, were those concerns resolved then by the time of the most recent audit?
To the chair, Representative Gardner, yes, that they had been resolved.
Thank you.
Yeah. Reverend Gernberg.
Ms. Davidson, did it appear that there were procedures in place that gave network members an unfair advantage previously?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, the problems that I had identified were the ones that came to our attention during the course of the audit. I'm not sure if you mean an unfair advantage in receiving funding. I'm not clear on how you mean that.
My question was unclear because my mind is cloudy, too, on the subject. We ought to pass on, I guess, okay?
Is an objection maintained? Objection? We do have an objection. Member, Chair, would you? Oh, yes.
Could you please repeat the amendment?
Oh, the amendment was to eliminate sections 1 and 2 from the bill.
Okay.
And to make a conforming amendment with the title. We'll have to come up with a concurrent resolution.
Gotcha. And so that's what it is, and the effect of that is to leave the makeup of the council and the network's recommendations to the governor still in place.
Everything is same.
Everything's the same.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Secretary, yes.
Just one thing to respond to what Ms. Mason said.
No, I don't want to respond. We're going to vote, yes.
I'd ask that Representative Elkins, I think he went to the restroom, would return before you
okay.
have a vote.
Representative Grunberg.
To respond to something Ms. Mason said, I think it's a little incorrect to say there would be no change because the current law requires the governor to consult with the network. And if this law were amended, there'd be no requirement that consultation take place. That would be a change. And I'd ask Ms. Mason whether the members understood that would be a change.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, we understand and the council members understand that the language and the requirement of the government would change. What we were saying or what the council is stating with that is that the actual effect would not change. The council, the network could still make recommendations. The governor could still accept. So
thank
it's
you.
Not the actual statute.
Thank you for clarifying that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And we'll take a very brief adjournment. Back in order, and we have before us amendment number 2, which removes section 1 and 2 and makes a conforming title amendment. Madam Secretary, would you call the roll?
Representative Gardner.
Yes.
Representative Grunberg.
Yes.
Representative Gatto.
Yes.
Representative Elkins.
No.
Representative Lynn.
Yes.
Representative Bramrus.
No.
Chair Seaton.
Yes. Amendment
5, yea, 2, nay.
Amendment number 2 passes. Do we have a motion on the bill?
Yes, I'll move the bill with individual recommendations.
Okay, Representative Grunberg, move the bill with individual recommendations, and I'm not sure if we have a fiscal note.
Were you going to take that other component separately?
The joint resolution will follow. That's a title amendment that was included in the amendment.
Now, Mr. Chair, are we going to talk about a letter of intent here?
We will after we move the bill. Representative Grunberg moved to move SB 250 as amended from committee with individual recommendations. Are there any objections? Seeing no objections, bill moved from committee. Representative Gardner, would you sign before you?
I do.
You have. Okay. And now we have a letter of intent, Representative Grunberg.
Mr. Chair, I recall Representative Gatto stating that he was thinking of a letter of intent, and I would ask, is that still your thought? And if so, tell us what you want to do, and I may have an amendment to your suggestion.
It was to come back with recommendations as to how they can implement a plan that satisfies the statute.
And when would that recommendations be? Do you want to put a date on that?
I think it's probably appropriate. I haven't thought about it. If there's a suggestion, I'll listen.
By the first day of the next legislative session.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, it's a lot of time.
Okay, so we have a motion for a letter of intent that will set forward a strategic plan to accomplish the requirements of the statute and to report back to the State Affairs Committee by the first day of next session, and that's by Vice Chair Gatto and...
I'm not sure if it was just to the committee or to the, I would say, to the both houses.
Yeah, to the legislature. And is that a friendly amendment?
Yeah.
That's friendly amendment. Is there any objection to letter of intent? Seeing none, letter of intent is there. We have...
And our staff will draw, Mr. Flora will draft that?
Yes. We have a CS for SB 12 in our packets, which is incorporating the amendments that we made previously to SB 12, State Affairs, and it also has a copy of the House Concurrent Resolution that would be needed for the title change.
Could somebody go over this? It's been a while since we've had with this.
Sure. And SB 12 is the bill relating to procurement from persons conducting business or having headquarters in countries that ignore slavery or trafficking in persons. This was the Tier 1, Tier 2, Tier 3 list. We modified that, removing the section that applied to the permanent fund. We changed it so that the commissioner or the administration, instead of talking about procedures, we modified that, amended it to meet regulations, and we made it change the title so that it just talked about procurement and not about financial persons having financial interest in another, because that applied to the permanent fund dividend section. Are there any?
Do we have to move to bring this up?
Yes. Would you go ahead and move the CS?
Okay. Mr. Chair, I'll move the work draft for House CS for CS for Senate Bill 12, State Affairs, version S, like Sierra, for consideration.
Okay. Thank you. That is there any objection? Seeing none, that's before us. The CS incorporates the amendments that we made previously. Is there any committee discussion? Do we have Representative Lynn?
Mr. Chair, with your permission, I would move House CS for CS for Senate Bill Number 12, State Affairs 24-LS0143/S, where the individual recommendations, is there a fiscal note here?
Yes, there is.
With the attached fiscal note.
And that would be with the accompanying House concurrent resolution for title change?
Yes.
Thank you.
I think we technically need to make that a separate motion, because this is introduced by the State Affairs Committee.
Thank you, Representative Grunberg. So, is there any objection? Seeing no objection, House CS for CS for Senate Bill 12, version S will move from committee with individual recommendations, attached fiscal notes.
I will move.
And Representative Grunberg?
I will move that the House State Affairs Committee introduce House concurrent resolution on the subject, which is labeled 24-L as in Lima, S as in Sierra, 18/16/A as in Alpha, date 3/31/06.
Is there any objection? Seeing no objection, House concurrent resolution /A will move from committee. And
be introduced.
We will adjourn and have our the prison bill up before us first thing on Thursday. Thank you, committee.